everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, things to think about. All right, now look, my friends, 1966. August 1st, 1966. Stuart Brown was a psychiatrist, and he was doing his assistant professorship at Baylor College when a 25-year-old guy, Charles Whitman, climbed to the top of the University of Texas Tower and shot 46 people. You remember this? I mean, it was certainly part of history. Whitman, who was an engineering student and a former U.S. Marine sharpshooter, was the last person anyone expected to go on a killing spree. He was such a sweet man. You know, like everybody says, oh, he was such a nice guy. After this psychiatrist, Brown, was assigned to the state's consulting psychiatrist to investigate the incident, later he interviewed 26 convicted Texas murderers for a small pilot study. Must have been fun doing the interview. You know, I mean, he's asking them things about themselves, and he found one thing in common with every one of them. Everyone had been abused as a child. Everyone never played as a kid. Ooh, that's kind of interesting information, don't you think? Never played as a kid. Brown didn't know which factor was more important, but in the 42 years since, he's interviewed 6,000 people about their childhood, and his data suggests that a lack of opportunities for unstructured, imaginative play can keep children from growing into happy, well-adjusted adults. So now let's talk about unstructured play. Of course, you know, kids have play dates, and they play cards, and they play basketball, and they play, but unstructured play. What is unstructured play? Unstructured play is what your cat does. You know, you have a little ball of thread on the ground, and as if everybody keeps a ball of thread on the ground, and your cat looks at it, and the first thing it does is touch it. And it moves. And the cat doesn't know in advance. Oh, there goes a ball of thread. I think I'll chase it all over the room and run after it and throw it up in the air. No. Unstructured. As it goes along. Unstructured playtime. Free play, as scientists call it, is critical for becoming socially adept. Coping with stress and building cognitive skills such as problem solving. Most psychologists agree that play affords the benefits that last through adulthood. They all think it's a good idea. The kids should play. But they don't always agree on the extent of which a lack of play harms children. Particularly because in the past, few children grew up without ample frolicking time in the past. But nowadays, free play may be losing its standing as a staple of youth. According to a paper published in 2005 in the Archive of Pediatrics and Adolescent Medicine, children's free play time dropped by a quarter between 1981 and 97. 25% free play time dropped. Concerned about getting their kids into the right colleges, parents are sacrificing play time for more structured activities. And as early as preschool, children's after-school hours are now filled with music lessons, sports, reducing time for the type of imagination and rambunctious cavorting that we used to do. You know, rambunctious cavorting. When's the last time you rambunctiously cavorted? You know, with somebody you know, love, or play with. You know, every time I run into somebody who's alienated from one of their siblings, I always recommend that they get a toy from childhood and they bring it to their sibling and play a game that they used to play, like a spalding or a stickball bat or something that you used to play with, or jumping jacks. And to go back and bring back to your sibling that you're alienated from, which you're alienated, a plaything. Because it reunites you. It gets you back together. A handful of studies support Brown's conviction that play-deprived children disrupt normal social, emotional, and cognitive development in humans and animals. Have you ever met a person who doesn't know how to play? I mean, they know how to joke, they know how to kid, but they don't know how to play. I meet people like that. They just don't know what to do. They get caught. So the psychiatrist that says that we develop the consequence of a life that is seriously play-derived is very serious stuff, he said, because it's never too late to start. Worries over the demise of play surfaced as back as 1961, when, believe it or not, there was an International Play Association. Would you believe that in Denmark? Who else would do that but the Danes? To protect, preserve, and promote play as a fundamental right for all children. And, of course, it went downhill, because who was getting ahead in life? The people who were moving ahead in the next generation were the people who you took the play away from. The people who were moving ahead were the people who got into the right schools from the early age. They learned to play violin when they were 1.5 years old. You know, and they could play the Goldberg variations on piano, and they could play Bach on cello by the time they were 2. They could speak 7 languages, and, you know, I mean, this is what has happened to our kids. I was in Europe the other day. There's a whole bunch of kids who spoke foreign languages. I'm only kidding. Kids play. I mean, they play soccer, they play Scrabble, they play sousaphone. So why are the experts so concerned that games and more structured activities are eating into free play? But the games with rules are fun and sources of learning, but they don't give you that social skill of group cohesion. I remember the other day, or a while back, I was at a swimming pool, and I saw a young girl jumping into a swimming pool, and there was a kind of a competition. They were like 13 years old or 12 years old. And it was one of these do-as-I-do competitions. And the child jumps in the water and does a dive and says, see if you could do this. And the next one jumps in, and the first one says, no, you have to hold your fist like this, and then you have to squeeze your leg like this at the same time as you jump. And she made up rules as she went along, and the next one goes in, and she tries to follow the rules, and this said, but you have to do it this way. And she made up rules, and it was fun. They were making up rules. Yes, you got to do it backwards. Yes, you have to do it on top of your head. Yes, you have to pat your head while you're, you know, rubbing your belly and laugh at the same time. That's fun. But what that does is a number of things. It creates a communication between you and the other person. A communication that says, how far can we go? How far can we play? Let's take this over to another level, and let's still cooperate. Let's still be together. Let's not get angry. You can knock me off my center. You can knock me, you can move me around. You can joke with me. There are adults who you can't joke with. They just don't take, they take everything so seriously. Imagine what they were like as children. We should be able to put on a silly hat and go into our office and sit there with people, and they should be able to laugh at us. You know, there should be something humorous about the way we do things. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about play. Let's talk about FaceTime. How did a seemingly pointless activity benefit kids? Play appears to help us develop strong social skills. You don't become socially competent by teachers telling you how to behave. The rules of behavior do not make you socially competent. What makes you sound, you learn these skills by interacting with others, with peers, learning what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, and dealing with variations and unpredictable things. It's the lack of predictability that makes it work for you. Keeping things friendly requires a fair bit of communication, arguably the most valuable skill of all. play that transpires with peers is the most important in this regard, my friends, and I'm going to ask you to think about yourself and your current ability to play. Are you living in a world without play? Are you taking it all so seriously? Well, you know, it is serious, I think. It is serious, I think. No. It is serious. However, if there's no play, there's something wrong. Because it's also a joke. There's a cosmic joke about how serious everything is. Because truly nothing is serious, and of course everything is serious. Is it serious that there are children starving? Of course that's serious. Is it serious that you may lose your job? Of course that's serious. Is it not serious at the same time? A very funny question. If you don't have the ability to see the ridiculous in the stress or in the sublime, you get stuck. So I want to help you with that today. I really want to help you with this by bringing this to your attention. The object here, my friend, is that you are going to, by some way or other, by the end of this program, bring play back into your life. It is very important. Let me read you a poem written by a young child a long time ago. This I remember coming to me, and I was shocked. It was about a young boy. Let's see, let's put a little Beethoven behind it. Here we go. He always, the poem says, he always wanted to explain things, but no one cared. So he drew. Sometimes he would draw and it wasn't anything. He wanted to carve it in stone or write it in the sky. And it would only be the sky and him and the things inside him that needed saying in his drawing. And it was after that he drew the picture. He kept it under his pillow and would let no one see it. And he would look at it every night and think about it. And when it was dark and his eyes were closed, he could still see it. This picture, it was all of him. And he loved it. He loved it. When he started school, he brought it with him. Not to show to anyone, but just to have it with him like a friend. It was funny about school. He sat on a square brown desk, like all the other square brown desks. And he thought it would be red. The desk should be red, he thought, because he thought in colors. And his room was square brown room, like all the other rooms. And it was tight and close and stiff. He hated to hold the pencil and the chalk, with his arms stiff and his feet flat on the floor. Stiff. With the teacher watching and watching. She came and spoke to him. She told him to wear a tie like all the other boys. And he said he didn't like them, and she said it didn't matter. After that, they all drew. And he drew all yellow, and it was the way he felt about morning. And it was beautiful, and the teacher came and smiled at him and said, "What's this?" she asked. "Why don't you draw something like Ken is drawing?" "Isn't that beautiful?" she said. After that, his mother bought him a tie. And he always drew airplanes and rocket ships like everybody else. And he threw the old picture away. And when he lay out alone looking at the sky, which was big and blue and all of everything, but he wasn't big and blue anymore. He was like everyone else. And the things inside him that needed saying didn't need it anymore. It had stopped pushing. It was crushed. It was stiff. Just like everything else. A 16-year-old boy wrote that. It happens to us, you know. We get caught like that. Most adults neither able to play nor understand what play is. They may have many activities, hobbies, recreations, and interests, but they do not play. Even when they run, they do not run as children do. Right? They have timers on their hands and things on their wrist and a bottle attached to them, and they're running in special sneakers with inserts and bands around their wrists. They're working at running. They spend money, time, and energy working at recreation, recreation, recreation. What a funny word. Consequently, they are not recreated, which is what the word recreation is supposed to mean. You're supposed to recreate yourself, which is what recreation means. So psychiatrist Pat Malone and his son Pat Malone Jr., guess what name he gave him, argue that the whimsical essence of play is also the essence of intimacy, and that too many adults have lost their ability both to play and to be intimate. Now, there's a funny thing. Because one of the things that people do when they become intimate is they play too much. I've seen men who joke around as soon as they have an orgasm. Right? You think that comes out of nowhere? No. People making love, they get close, they have the thing, and then, you know, the guy doesn't want to get too serious, and as soon as they make love, he starts joking and being funny, and he's no longer being an adult man. He's being a boy, and his mate says, no, please give me some oxytocin, get over here, hug me, stay with me, look at me. And he's joking, joking, joking. Well, sometimes play like that is an avoidance of intimacy. There are a lot of people I know who just can't be serious. They can't do anything. They can't stay with one job, and they're always playing. But I'm not so sure they're playing, because there's always an aggressiveness behind their play. See, play has a way of engaging who you're engaged with. Usually they're in the same field. Usually they're willing to play with you. If you're playing and they're not, it loses its essence of play. In The Art of Intimacy, the Malones, who wrote this book, they observe that true play, like intimacy, is a way of being, not a thing of doing. Are you playful? Are you playful during lovemaking? Are you playful being together? Are you playful? Is it fun? Adults go from activity to activity in search of play, just as they may go from person to person in the quest for intimacy. You know? You're searching for play. What do you think you're looking for? Unlike children who will play, fight, and then freely play again, most adults end up in a chronic, low-level struggling that eventually replaces play entirely and destroys intimacy. Then from here on in, it's all little arguments, little battles, little problems, dealing with this. How much laughter is there in your house? Do you realize what's happened on television? There's a couple of shows on TV that that I hear sometimes in the background, like Will and Grace is one, a comedy show, or Seinfeld. They have canned laughter. What is canned laughter? Canned laughter is laughter when there is no audience. When you have canned laughter, it's a very funny thing, because in a way, it's inspiring you to somehow chuckle. Now, how many of you have ever watched a show that has canned laughter where, you know, watch something like Seinfeld and there's something funny going on? It's a little whimsical. It's not bad. It's Larry David's writing. It's pretty good stuff. And you kind of smile. You smirk. It's like a little cutesy thing. Right? The way he talks. And then what happens? The audience is laughing like they're falling off their chair, but it's a recording. How does that make you feel? Well, strangely enough, one of the studies is that it makes you depressed. Watching comedy where others are laughing and you're not can, in effect, trigger a depression in you. You are excluded. You're left out. There's something wrong with you. So how do we break this pattern? What do we do? Can an adult rediscover play? I maintain that the first step is a spiritual one. People must surrender their specialness. The idea that their problems are so special, so unique, so superior, worse than others. What you have to do, number one, is accept you are ordinary. No matter what you're going through. I mean, my problems are as big as your problems. Vicki Hufnagel's problems are as big as Joe Malone's problems. Everybody's problems are, they're all big. Not one is so special than the other. Not one is so much greater. Yes, some have more tragedy in it than yesterday. You know, yesterday we were listening and we heard somebody talk with a multiple personality and we say, oh, that was really crisis stuff. It's none of it is special. We all have hard times. You got a broken body, it's not so special. You're going to die, it's not so special. A lot of people die. You know, so the first thing we have to do is get out of this specialness. Because if we accept the ordinariness of life, with its normal stresses and difficulties, that means we give up our need to win. See, if we don't see everything as so special and so unique, then we just play the game. All right, I'm going to go into this. Yep, I got a disorder. Yep, I got to get my hip replaced. I'll go to the doctor and get my hip replaced. Yes, I have this thing. I have to go through it. Not so special, not such a big deal. I mean, a big deal to you because your life may be at stake, but on the scale of things, it's people go through this. Once you give up the need to win, to beat things, you begin to enjoy the game. Because the problem with winning is you forget the game. I know a friend who's hooked on solitaire. Solitaire on the computer. Now, the solitaire on the computer has a kind of thing. You can play it. You play it on a computer. The thing on the computer that they do is they keep a record of how fast you won the game. So you could win the game if you beat the game, which you win one out of about 10 times. You can beat it in about 120 seconds. But the thing it says is best time. So now the most important thing is not winning the game of solitaire, which takes some thinking. You know, if you think about solitaire, it could be pretty interesting the way you work things around. Now it's just how fast do you do it? Like a Rubik's Cube, you know? It's no longer what could I get out of this? How can I create new colors? How do I get new twists? Where's the variation? No, you're looking for the end. Watch out for that need to win, my friends. Watch out. Give up the end of the game. Enjoy the during the game. Give up the need to be first and enjoy just being. Give up the need to be in control. And so enjoy the other person as well. Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take your telephone calls after our break today. There are different kinds of play, although researchers usually emphasize the positive effect of play on the developing brain, which we've learned. If I were a parent of a young child at this point, I would make sure there is unstructured play. What would I do? Structure unstructured playtime? Is that the way you do it? All right, it's 4:42. It's now have unstructured play till 4:45. No. It's not the way, but I would make sure that I give that value. A couple of different kinds of play. There's body play. Participate in some form of active movement that has no time pressures or expected outcome, like dance is body play. You know, dance is wonderful for that. Object play. Use your hands to create something you enjoy. It could be anything. You have a piece of paper in front of you. Build something. Create something. Draw something. Social play. Join other people in seemingly purposeless social activities. from small talk to verbal jousting. You know the number of you out there who say, I can't do small talk? Do small talk. It's meaningless. It's good for you. Big talk will weigh you down all the time. How about I've got to have depth in my conversations? Oh, my God, you can get depth when you die. You get 6 feet of depth. You know what I mean? You get a lot of depth. Give depth a little relief. Come on, get stuff up on the surface where the balls can still roll, you know, where things can be light enough, where a kite could fly. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. If you're still not sure what to do, try to remember what you enjoyed doing as a child. Find your childhood play's true north and translate that memory. You know, I mean, I'm serious about it, and I could tell for those of you who know Spalding's. Find a Spalding. Find a ball. Play with it. Throw it against the wall in your room. Have fun. And try to have fun with the people that you love. It's such an important thing. It means so much. Play is so crucial, you know, that if you don't allow it to yourself, then what do you become? You become an adult. Now, who wants to be an adult? Well, I do. I am an adult. I'm a grown-up. But I don't want to give up the play in me. If I give up the play in me, I cannot create. I do every day, with the help of my assistants, a relatively new radio program with relatively new music every time. I have done this now for 20 years. Ask yourself, how does he do this? Well, it comes from the playful part of my brain. It's not only the curious, it's not only the smart part of my brain, but it's the curious part of my brain. What is this? Let's talk about this. How can we look at this differently? Looking at things differently is what you get from play. When you see a ball on the ground and you pick it up and you turn it over and you see how it rolls and which way you could pick it up and how you could toss it up, all of that is play. And that creates in you a brilliant new way of seeing. With that perception, my friends, not only will you feel lighter in your life, but you will also feel like freer, younger, more energetic, and you'll be able to love better. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about play, and we're going to be taking your phone calls after our break today at 212-209-2900. Also, a reminder to you, starting on Monday, there's going to be the fun drive on WBAI, and this means we need your help. We need to raise money for the station. I'll be bringing you special programming on Wednesday, I think related to human sexuality, but you could see the schedule of our programs on the website, thepositivemind.com. I'll also be doing a keynote address at a lecture on March 1st, which you'll also find by going to the website, a conference in New York, just if you want to see me stand up and tell jokes, which I think I'll do, because it's a very serious conference. It's about surviving the economy. So I think we need to tell some humor. I'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friends.
Ladies and gentlemen, before you die, please don't listen to those blizzard of lies. My name is Nellie Mackay. You'll listen to New York WBAI.
Talkback is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas, heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis,
stand by, Armand.
Comments, questions,
here we
and
go.
Observations. That's
5, Talkback
right
4,
here,
3,
WBAI,
2,
New York.
Go.
Silly rule. If growing up means it
serious expression.
I try to act just like a guy. Just growing up's awfuler than all the awful things that ever been. I won't grow up, won't grow up. I won't grow up again.
Ricky Lee Jones, from an album called Pop Pop, many years ago, I Won't Grow Up. Do you ever feel that way? 212-209-2900. Hey, listen, when I'm taking callers today, do me a favor. I have some very good skilled callers who know how to get to be the first phone call and usually ask me a lot of stuff, but I really want to take enough time today to get with new callers, people who haven't had a chance, because I've been getting a lot of notes from people saying, you know, I stayed online for 20 minutes, and all you took was three calls. So we're going to try it today. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand. How are you? It's Tony.
Hello, Ron. Tony.
How you doing?
Good. Good.
Good. You know, this is such an interesting topic. I've been athletic and competitive all my life. And, you know, I'm one of those guys that I'm incredibly competitive, and I win in sports all the time.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that helped me to get better at this was what you just said, to remember that it's a game. You know, I just lost the enjoyment of it. And I was watching this one gentleman, and I know him for years, and the guy's just not a good player. And no matter what, he never has become like a really good player. And I, all of a sudden, I admired him, and I saw how week after week, the guy is not a great player. He just has learned how to keep going. And here I am, with an occasional loss because I'm a good player and I didn't know how to handle it. I would have these tantrums, I would have depression, all kinds of things. And it was so interesting how this guy inspired me to you know, kind of like relax and look at it as slightly different.
Oh, Tony, what a wonderful gift to yourself and to the people listening. It is so true. The end product game. I used to teach chess. I was a chess master when I was a kid. And as I grew up, I was playing chess, and then I used to teach chess. And it was terrible watching people compete with each other because they felt so bad if they made mistakes.
Right.
And chess is like a language. Chess is like learning French. You're going to make mistakes. So what I would do is I would have a person play the game for 5 minutes, and then I'd have them reverse the board. And that meant I want you to just turn the board around and play from the other person's position. Because I wanted to get the idea of winning out of your head.
Right.
Don't win, play.
Right.
And that wound up with people having a great deal of fun over the board, and I think developing superior players. Now,
yeah.
Are you a basketball player primarily?
No, I play it's an inner-city sport, like racquetball, paddleball.
Uh-huh, that kind of
it's
stuff.
It's a racquet sport, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You could get really serious about that.
Oh, are you kidding?
You
it's
know,
like anything
you
else.
Know, you said something. You don't play sport. You do sport.
Oh, I'm an extreme competitive animal. It's ridiculous, but what's made me enjoy it more in my recent years, it's, you know, getting insights like this, and you know what? I am going to go up to the gentleman that I talked to you about, and I'm going to thank him because, you know, it's amazing. You know what it is to go every weekend and lose and then get online and then lose and then get online, and the guy's been playing for 20 years.
Beautiful.
And here I am, every weekend I win most of my games, but the occasional loss will throw me for a loop, you know? It's just amazing that, you know...
It's a beautiful thing. Do you have any children?
Yes, I do. I have a daughter.
How does play go with her? Is she competitive? Is she one of these kids like you? Is she pick up, I'm going to be great for daddy, I'm going to be a champion?
You know what? I've done everything I can as far back as I can remember about making her an ultimate athlete, and she hates sports. And I've had a lot of we've had our arguments and fights over it and everything, and I've just kind of given up. But I think I pushed so hard that I turned her off.
One of the very sad things that I got when I was looking at the Olympics was I was looking at some interviews with the daughters, the children who were floor champions and who were sports champions and swimmers and people who were children who were brought up from a very early age to be the ultimate athlete. And their fathers were talking about it on camera. And I was terrified. I thought, what are you doing? This kid is no longer a kid. This is no child. This is a little machine. This person has no idea of play whatsoever. So, do you play with your daughter? Now, this is an interesting question. Since you're sports-minded and she doesn't like sports, does she play? Yeah.
I joke with her a lot. We have a great relationship. We joke all the time. So, if that's play, yeah, we play not as much, you know, like that. We have, you know, I'm really very funny, and she's funny, and, you know, I make her laugh all the time. We always laugh, and in between our fighting, of course. So it's
an important
thing.
Respect. Yes, it's very important. I'm glad you got that.
Yeah. But you know what? Thanks to your show today, I'm going to make an effort to just play.
Yeah.
No,
A little more.
I'll make this really quick. I signed up for a basketball camp when she was about 10, and I remember being on the sideline. Yeah, hurry up. And you know what? She told me, Daddy, I don't want to go there anymore. And I said, why? What's the problem? She goes, you take the fun out of playing.
Oh, beautiful. How perfect. What a message.
And I didn't get it then, and I get it now.
Tony, what's your daughter's name?
Her name is Patricia.
Patricia's wisdom. You take the fun out of playing. I love it. Thank you. We'll write that down. Beautiful. Thanks for calling in, Tony. Sure.
Bye.
212-209-2900. You take the fun out of playing. Oh. Gosh almighty. Heidi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Good afternoon, Armand.
Hi there.
My name is Al.
Hello, Al.
I'd like to read this for you real quick.
Sure.
It says, baseball teaches us, or has taught most of us, how to deal with failure. We learn at a very young age that failure is the norm in baseball. Precisely because we have failed, we hold in high regard those who fail less often than we do. Those who hit safely in one out of three chances and become star players. I also find it fascinating that baseball alone in sport considers errors to be part of the game, part of its rigorous truth. And that's I was reading a book this morning called The Spirituality of Imperfection.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing. That's great. I really appreciate that. You know, Al, it's kind of what you're saying is the essence of it. I never thought about baseball that way. But I remember I was watching a football game one day on television. It seemed to be a very important thing, like a playoff game. And it was really down to the wire. You know, it was a matter of 3 points or 2 points or something like that. And they were struggling and they were desperately fighting and they were fighting so hard. And at the end of it, the team that lost, and the team that won, and they were celebrating. But the team that lost was hugging the people who won. And they were like, yeah, we lost. That's the way it is. It's not all about winning. We lost. We tried. We lost. It's okay. Failure is okay. Not succeeding, not getting to the top is okay. Very good, Al. Very good.
Oh, Armand, I got one favor I need from you.
Sure.
On your program last Wednesday, the 21st,
yeah.
The music that you played, that piece that you played at the end of the program, is there any possible way that I could get the name of that?
Yeah, here's the way you could get all the music that we ever play. If you go to my website, thepositivemind.com, and you go to listen to the radio shows, when you get the archive, you'll get the archive. It'll actually list the music that we played that day. Now, hold on a second. My engineer is looking. Do you have the song?
Yes, I...
No, wait. She's going to tell me right away. What is it, Stephanie? Bam, pick up the mic, Steph. Here we go. Okay, you're getting a report, Al.
Thank you, Arma.
Coming from... What do we got there?
Hi, Al.
Go.
Hi, Al.
Yes?
Trust Me, The Fray.
Trust?
Trust Me by The Fray? That was the outro fray. Music, or that was the...
Which part of the show was it?
Was it on the outgoing or during the middle?
On the outgoing. It was like an opera piece. I heard it in the movie Hannibal.
No.
They played that same piece in the movie Hannibal, too. But it was a beautiful piece. I was sure you would like to go get it.
Now, okay, you have to look on the website, because what we have here is the middle. I don't remember what that piece was at the end, but I'm sure it was one of these other things that we do. Outro music usually is according to how I'm feeling at the moment. So I don't think I have a record of it, but we'll find it for you. We'll find it. Look on the website. If you don't find it, just send me an email, and I'll dig it up for you. All right, so thank you very much for calling in, Al. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Hi there, let's take another call. You're on the air. Hello there. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Sorry, I didn't notice I was muted. I'm a new caller.
Hi there, new caller.
Hi. I've been listening to your show for about 1 or 2 years, maybe.
Wow, congratulations on calling. What inspired you today to get on the phone and say, I'm going to give it a shot?
Well, as you were talking about play, I used to play music back in my country, and it was exactly what you were describing, a lot of fun, a lot of playing with friends and stuff. But I stopped playing ever since I came to this country.
Do you know why?
Well, I had to do a lot of adult stuff to survive.
To survive?
Yeah.
Now, where are you from, Colombia? Where are you from originally?
Guatemala.
Guatemala. Okay, in Guatemala, what Guatemala musicians? Oh, my gosh. Guatemala is all music. You know, it's all music. It's rhythm. It's guitars. It's those big drums. I was hanging around some Guatemalans the other day.
Really?
Yeah, at midnight. It was midnight in West Hampton. And they
really?
Yeah, there's a little place where all the Guatemalans who work out there got together. And they have a little thing they do at night. So I was in there, and I'm listening to this music, and I'm saying to myself, oh, does that touch me? Because at first I thought it was Mexican.
Uh-huh.
And then I said, this isn't Mexican, and it has that special little Guatemalan taste, you know, which really touches me. So what did you play when you were a kid? What kind of music did you play?
I'm a singer, and I play a little guitar.
Okay, and when you would sing, would you sing freely?
We did that with friends for a while, and yeah.
What kind of things would you sing? I mean, what would you sing?
Well, I write my own songs, and we were doing... I would, you know, sing to back vocals for friends, or we would improvising. I had a different bands. I had a rock band. And then.
Oh, I mean, you were really doing serious stuff, rock band. What about?
Yeah, lately it's been more folky.
More folky. So when you would make, did you make fun music, or did you make serious music?
No, I was doing very serious music.
Very serious music.
Yeah.
It's a funny thing about being in Guatemala and making music, but because, you know, the music does have a kind of a serious tone to it. But do you remember something that you wrote? Was there a song that
play,
you...
I can still play the songs. It's just that I don't play out for people anymore.
What is the song? What is the song that you used to play? Tell me the name of it, yeah.
Well, there's one called Eternal Time.
Eternal Time?
Yeah.
But you sang that in Spanish. You didn't sing it in English.
Yes, Tiempo Eterno.
Could you do me a favor?
Mm-hmm.
Sing it for me.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, let me hear. Let me hear. A little louder, please. Sing right into the telephone.
I'm on the telephone. I'm using the headset.
All right, now go to the regular handset.
Toda la luz atraviesa el mar hasta volver a estar. I forget the lyrics.
Yeah. How does it feel to be singing it?
Yeah, I have to be reading the lyrics now. You see, I'm forgetting them.
No, you're forgetting them because you're also excited. But, I mean, how does it feel to be singing?
Well, right now on the phone is weird.
It is weird, isn't it? So we need you. We need you to make a recording. I want you to sing. I want you to practice a song. I want you to call us back. I want you to sing for us, or I want you to send me a little CD with your voice on it.
Okay.
Because I need your voice. You see, the world needs your voice. But don't make it serious. It's not important.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Thank you. You sound much better already. What's your name?
Maria.
Maria, you sound much lighter in your heart already. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Talking about play, I got to tell you a funny story about this one brother and sister I knew who had such, they were very bound as brother and sister because the family was nuts. Family was just crazy. Mom had no interest in being a mother. Dad was off in his own narcissistic world. He only wanted the kids when they would admire him. But they left these two children alone all the time to entertain each other, and these children were very bored, so of course they played a lot. But they had a favorite game that they played, and it was the funniest game. The game was called Bert and Rita. And they would yell to each other, "Let's play Bert and Rita." And this was their favorite game. And what they would do is jump into their parents' bed. And they would sit in their bed and they would fight with each other. And they would yell at each other. And they'd call each other names. "You stupid!" And it was called playing Bert and Rita. And they would do it as part of their great entertainment. One could think, if one has a little depth about it, that these kids were doing something to kind of correct their minds. That they were imitating their parents. See, because this is what they always heard their parents doing, as a way of correcting their mind. Well, I think people do that in play. I think play is a way of writing all the stuff that doesn't make sense by giving it some flow. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. 212-209-2900. Hi there, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Good afternoon, Armand DeMille. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. Who is this?
This is Jerry from Long Island.
Jerick?
Jerry.
Jerry. Hi, Jerry.
I have a question that I know that you can answer. Do the hands that a person writes with has anything to do with their personality?
Well, there's an interesting question. Huh? Did you see Obama sign with his left hand?
And all of the preceding presidents, Bush did too, and so did, I believe, Reagan, and certainly Bill Clinton. And I was just so curious whether that's a prerequisite to be president.
It might be. You might have to be left-handed to be a president.
Wow.
Well, it's kind of an interesting thing because there is a brain synchronization that goes on there with left-hand dominance. Here's one of the things that we learned about right-hand, left-hand. Are you right-handed or left-handed?
I write with my right hand, but I'm a guitarist, and so I finger with my left hand.
So. Uh-huh. Okay, so you're really both hands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Here's what they said. A very interesting psychiatrist once said, psychologist said, your right hand of your body, the right side of your body, is used for aggression. It is used for getting what you want. It is used for your movement forward. The left side of your body is used for defense. It's used to protect you against assault. So he said, whenever people would have disorders in one side of their body or the other, he would say, that's what you're having a problem with. So if a person said, I'm having trouble with my right arm, he would say, it's because you're not comfortable being aggressive.
Wow.
And if they said, I have trouble with my left arm, he would say it's because you're not comfortable defending yourself. And he would work with this basis. Well, I found it, this correlation really worked. So I would say that one of the things that right-hand dominance and left-hand dominance show me is how well a person can either assault or defend. And if we were to take this as a characteristic and relate it to Obama's left-handedness, we would say Obama, if he's going to be great at something, it may not be at being aggressive, like, you know, in sending bombs in places, right, but he's going to be fabulous in the defense of mankind.
Okay.
Maybe.
Great correlation. I really appreciate that.
Sure, and I appreciate you.
Thank you.
And what kind of music do you play with your guitar?
I play rhythm and blues, and I recorded way back when with some names out there, like Wilson Pickett and
Well, did you really? See, you really, you really had, you were really in the play of it.
Way back in 1968, just before I got drafted for the Vietnam War, I won first prize at the Apollo Theater as JC and the Entertainers.
Wow.
Yes. So I have a
Do we have a recording of this you could ever send over to me that we could play?
Well, I will make a recording.
I want to hear a recording of that. And let me tell you something about rhythm and blues and jazz.
Uh-huh.
One of the beauty about rhythm and blues and jazz is you get a chance to play it.
Oh, yeah.
You see, when you have strategic music that you have to follow and you have to read every note, you don't really get a chance to play much.
Right.
But when you get rhythm and blues and you get jazz, you get the ability to play jazz.
It comes from a higher source.
And you could be as free as you want and as loose as you want. You listen to Charlie Parker or somebody like that play, and you say to yourself, this is just amazing, because he's having fun.
Well, you know what I'm going to do for you, Amon? My wife's mother used to be in an all-girls band called International Sweethearts of Rhythm, and I'm going to send you one of her videos.
Send me that as well.
Okay,
fabulous.
Got to check that out.
Fabulous. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Unfortunately, we have to be going. I don't want to be going. I don't want to be leaving you. I love you guys. But we got to do it. And I'm just an ordinary guy. And it's just an ordinary program. And so what we're going to do is we're going to pick this up in a while. But for next week, Wednesday, at 1 p.m., you get 2 hours of me. Following week, it'll be on Tuesday at 1 p.m., and it'll be sporadic over February, and then comes March, and I'll be back with you. This is my love to all of you, my friends. If you want to get in touch with me, go to the website, thepositivemind.com, or write me an email, Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. Bye-bye for now. I'm
كبروا